Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey kids, last week the eclipse knocked out my sound bending powers and my ability to speak. Yeah, I kept calling it the solstice. Anyway, we're back up. At least me and Goodwin are. And just to let you know, this episode not only contains swearing, but also talk of animal death. Hello, welcome to the Reading Circle Temple. I'm Marjorie.
I'm Goodwin.
Brittany's on spring break and Indy's also out. But today, we are reading chapter 17 of Battle Magic. So grab your cup of coffee.
Or tea.
Or your drink of choice.
And we'll use what we have. It will be enough.
Yep.
Alternatively, sling balls at our enemies.
we're using what we got.
Yeah, I'm so glad that quote was in this chapter because it kind of fits because it's just us and it'll be fine. It's fine. Yes. We'll get through.
It was the perfect quote for this. All right, chapter 17. Parahan and Sudamini are upset because they're all like leaving the Temple of the Tigers and like they guess they drew lots and they're last and everybody else is taking forever. But it turns out to be an advantage because Briar's like, wait. I feel Rosethorn. I sense her returning. So the gang reunites with Rosethorn, who finds out that Ethie is dead. Spoiler, she's not dead, but they don't know that yet. Briar asks her about the Temple of the Sealed Eye, and she's like, no, I won't tell you anything. Suda is like, you guys are plant mages. You're not going to be very useful in a battle. Turns out she's wrong when they actually end up in battle. Briar and Rosethorn use their seed balls to attack people with all of their vines. And then Briar figures out that if they can get somebody with a sling, he gets G-Mutt, because G-Mutt's already there, and G-Mutt's awesome. They can use the sling to throw the seed balls even further. Rosethorn gets a slinger as well. The enemy mages figure out what they're up to, start attacking Briar and Rosethorn. And G-Mutt and one of the Yongshin mages, River Dancer, help keep Briar and Rosethorn alive. And is this about the part? Yeah, this is about the part where Briar goes revenge crazy.
Seeks out the mages and like starts, first of all, shatters their magical necklaces. And then tries to strangle them with grass. And then like he's really going at it. And eventually he feels Rosethorn tugging on his ear and telling him, get the fuck back here. What are you doing? Because, he can get lost in that. So, yeah,
not good. And that's about where we end?
Oh, then the medic tents come up after the battle and they start healing the people that are injured. And
they talk
Rosethorn,
about...
Briar has a little fit about helping.
He doesn't want to heal enemies because he's... still revenge crazy.
Yeah. Which, fair, but there are very good reasons why you should.
Which we'll get to in just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Part one of our three-step reading process is reading like a novice. This is where we talk about what we liked and didn't like about the chapter. So I want to hear about why it's important to heal your enemies, unless that comes in a later section. Also, your improvements for the seed delivery system.
Oh, let me tell you, this is like, I love specifically, I love the fights in this book because they're very, I mean, they're not super in depth, but they're very medieval combat warfare, which I love. Can't say I've done very much of it myself. aside from at the Ren Fair, but that's because someone tried to steal my turkey leg. I mean, Rose Thorn kind of does the entire point, but when you defeat an enemy, which doesn't mean killing them all, just, beating them in battle, and either they rout, they lose cohesion and leave or scatter, or they give up. Even if the other side's like a rat fucking bastard, like that doesn't mean that all the people fighting in his army are. Like Rose Thorn says, some people are forced to. If you refuse to serve, their families could be in danger. It kind of comes down to pretty much all warfare being young people dying for the wants of like an older class that wants to keep power. So be nice to those people. You need to show that you are, if not merciful, at least like you're not going to kill everyone that you capture. Because if you get that reputation of being a force that will kill the enemy to the last man, the other side will fight to the last man because they know it's coming. So if you can make them yield and not have to kill them and still, beat them in a fight where they're no longer willing to fight and know that they're not going to be like executed immediately after they give up, you have a much easier time in fights in the future. Plus,
There's
it's just, the right thing to do.
what you, I mean, yeah, that was my reason, like take care of people. But what you said about wars being young people fighting for an older class that want to stay in power, and like just because like the person in charge is Emperor Weishu doesn't mean like everyone is terrible. That reminds me a lot of being on the phone with customer service.
You are put on the front lines to answer for the issues that the people in charge, the issues that they caused or didn't fix, and you're stuck there trying to be nice to people. Yeah.
So be nice to your customer service reps because it's probably not their fault.
It's definitely almost 100% not their fault. And they are just there to make money and have a paycheck. It's be yeah, be kind.
All right, what else have you got, Goodwin?
The seed arrow thing. Okay, so people have been strapping stuff to crossbow bolts for since fucking crossbows were invented, like what, like the 12th, 11th century, something like that. So the example I pulled out, like instead of like tying the seed ball to the tip, which would make the aerodynamics all funky, or like a cup tip where you can just put the ball in it, it'll fuck up the aerodynamics too. Just do the way they did incendiary arrows in the 14th century, which is like wrap either twine or fabric or something dipped in pitch or tar, whatever incendiary substance you want. And like, so just get like gauze or fabric with the seeds in it and just wrap it around the tip of the arrow and you're good to go. Because slings are good. They definitely have a much farther range than just throwing stuff, but compared to a crossbow, 200 meters, like it's like probably like at least three times as far.
Okay, so this is like a good tip for the future. But to be fair, like they already had their seed balls wrapped up as balls.
Since it's cotton, I was like, could they flatten them out or something? I don't know. I don't know, because then you'd have to reduce the payload of seeds to bolt too. So it's not like a perfect thing, but I think he had options. I think if they had a little more time, they could have thought of something else.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think they were also kind of like in the middle of battle or something, weren't they?
Right
It
about to
was,
be.
yeah,
Yeah, it
it
was,
was coming up fast.
yeah, like a day or two before. Yeah. But I'm like, give me more time. I could probably spitball something too, come up with something for, I mean, frankly, just get a fucking scorpion or like a catapult or a trebuchet with seed balls, and like now you're talking. Now you're thinking with I think they had more options, but that's fine. Maybe that's just me. I don't know.
All right, what else you got for this chapter?
I guess I'll start with the sad when Rose Thorn shows up and they say hi, and Briar's she asks him like, "Your eyes are puffy. You look like you've been dragged backwards through a bush. Tell me." And then he tells her about Evie, and then they cry. It's
The tears are real.
yeah, even though we know, God, it still fucking hurts to think about
I
our
know, like, I feel like it kind of makes it worse
Yeah.
because they're mourning her and you're like, oh, she's not dead.
You didn't have to do that. It's okay. Everything's gonna be fine.
That's
But
rough.
yeah, feels bad. But I'm sure it'll feel great when she just waltzes up riding a giant fucking yak called Big
Riding a
Mill.
yacht.
I really like the quote right after that where Rose Thorn looks at her handkerchief and twists it dry. Since I'll never get an answer from the gods, I shall have to work my frustration out on Wei Shu and his armies. That line just goes hard as fuck.
Yeah.
I love it. Feels a little revengey, but you know, I get it. But also, you know, we do kind of talk about how revenge is not good, but.
I really like that whole sequence where she's talking because she talks about being like a clergy person, sort of, and having to deal with things like 12-year-old girls dying in war. And
It's hard. It is hard to be religious sometimes.
yeah, like how do you reconcile those things?
It's tough, but I guess she'll have Wei Shu and his armies to you know ease some of that pain. And right after that, where Briar says she had put his rage into words, they would make Wei Shu pay. Very, very good.
He I feel like he's gonna act on that more than she is, in a sense. Tangent to go somewhere, hopefully. There's a YouTube channel that I like called Cinema Therapy, which is a filmmaker and a family therapist watch movies together, and every once in a while TV shows. And this morning, they dropped an episode about Uncle Iroh, and it was therapist versus therapist, family therapist versus Uncle Iroh. It was great. It's great because it opens, and the filmmaker's like, "This is what we're gonna do today," and the therapist is like, "I'm gonna lose." Like, I already know I'm gonna lose. One of the things they talked about in that video is the fact that, like, Iroh is a person who has been through a whole lot of shit, been through all of those dark feelings, and come out the other side and, like, chosen peace and chosen gratitude. That is why he has the demeanor he has. As snappy as Rose Thorn is, I feel like she's very similar. She has been through a lot of shit and she has come out the other side in a much more peaceful place. And obviously, like, we see her literally fighting here, but she's not really fighting out of vengeance. And I think we see
I,
that in Triss's book too.
yeah, I literally was just thinking of how she's fighting against Wei Shu not only for Evie, but to also protect the people in Jiangxi and like the rest of the temples and like all the rest of the good stuff that they're, you know, coming in to destroy.
And her faith and her people, like, this is like she has literally come back because of her vows. And then likewise in Triss's book, she's fighting to protect Winding Circle. But in both instances, we see Briar kind of feeding into this need for vengeance.
Yeah, like solely focused on Evie and what he's gonna do to them because of what they did to him. Like it's feels like solely revenge, while Rose Thorn has a loftier goal, I guess, is one way to put it.
Yeah, she's able to make it less personal. Like, this is something that she needs to do, but still, but this isn't about, it's not about vengeance.
It's about protecting the rest of the good things there.
And we'll see what that does to Briar.
Oh boy. It was already almost bad. I'm sure it'll get worse.
Well, you know, we're only what, like, halfway through this book. So,
We're 70% through, according to my Kindle
seriously?
app. Yeah. Like
We are further
72.
through than I thought, but still, we have not hit the end yet. And as we have seen, Tamara Pierce does like to go hard on her endings when she can.
There
So,
are always lessons to be learned.
yeah, so there's definitely something still to come.
I like the section where Briar finally asks Rose Thorn about the temple. And she's like, I can't tell you. He's like, was it just a temple? I can't say. Don't worry. It kind of was, and it kind of wasn't. She's like, come on, tell me. And he's like, no, I can't. I have an oath. And then he says, why can't you just break the oath like once? Come on. So how could you ever trust me? Or I you if I broke my oath? And that's kind of a
Actually have
interesting. Yeah.
an interesting connection to this from a couple of Tamara Pierce's other books, without saying too much about them. In some of her Tortall books, there's this place called the Chamber of the Ordeal. It's a place where you go to be tested. It's a very personal thing. You go in alone, you face what is in there alone. I think there may even be like you're not supposed to talk about it. So it's like very personal and secretive. I found like an interview somewhere where she talked about how she had to write the scenes where the characters go through the Chamber of the Ordeal because these are her protagonists, but it felt a little bit like violating their like privacy in a way, because if that wasn't the case, like we wouldn't know about them. And so we don't see a lot of the Temple of the Sealed Eye. We see her enter and we kind of skip over like her leaving the treasures and her journey back. And I wonder if that is part of the reason why was like this is a very like secretive, sacred place that people don't get to see. And so it feels like a violation to show it even to the reader. So.
Yeah, I was going to say that it was like we literally don't, we haven't finished the book, but I'm assuming that it probably doesn't get brought up again. We have no info aside from the one chapter where she starts. Nothing else is said. It's interesting. I get it on the one hand. On the other hand, I still kind of really want to know because we're not. Technically, we're not members. We're not ruining anything. But it is. It's kind of. I kind of feel both ways. I get it. Like I want to know, but I get why we aren't told.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Tamara Pierce is just awesome. I don't know. I'll just leave it at that, I guess.
We like her stuff. We stand her books in this house.
Absolutely. Because I don't think a lot of authors would have the gumption to not show that, or like they would show more. They would tell exactly what happened.
Yeah, I think the level of dissatisfaction with it probably comes from that. Like we kind of expect it because that's what we're used to in other books. And she was like,
Didn't
no,
get to
secret
know. It's a
place.
secret.
Yeah.
We told you it's a secret. I told you the whole time it was going to be a secret. So, what makes you think you're any better than the people in this universe?
Yeah.
And then she leans over and gives him a hug and says, you'll always be my boy.
And then he says, I'm not your boy.
So funny.
They're
Here.
so cute.
Yeah. And he really does act like a boy this entire chapter, which is, it makes sense, but it's
His
beautiful.
mama's home.
Yeah.
I mean, he's also only 16.
Yeah.
I love their reunion.
There is talk about abatises, which are something that I feel never ever gets brought up in any sort of like battlefield obstacle structure thing. You always hear about barbed wire, you hear about like, crenellations, walls, whatever, but like just like they're so effective for like just infantry on infantry combat without like firearms, because you just even with guns, it's
Okay.
just a tree.
I was gonna say, and for those of us who aren't familiar with the jargon, explain what it
Yeah, it is literally either a tree or like a bunch of sticks like intertwined and like faced towards the enemy. The branches are sharpened towards the enemy, and it is.
Oh.
Yeah, it's literally a tree knocked over sideways, interlaced with other trees, making a wall, and it just keeps people from pushing through to your defensive position. it is literally still in the like US, I believe it's Army and Marine Corps. Their handbooks for training, they're like, hey, literally knock over a bunch of trees on a road, crisscross interlacing to like keep tanks from moving through. Like it is still useful, but it was used in like the Civil War, it was used in the Spanish-American War, it was used like it's been used a lot in history. And it's very useful. It's literally just trees. It's fuel expedient. You just make it while you're out there. Like if you don't have enough barbed wire, knock a tree over, sharpen the limbs, and just like intertwine them together so people can't crawl through easily.
I have gotten the impression from Breyer's book, from Daja's book, maybe even before that, that Dameron Pierce does her research.
She knows her stuff. Like she'll bring up just a little world building hint, and it's like it kind of opens. Yeah, she does her research on what she talks about. Like it doesn't matter what it is. Like she never just throws something out there and like, oh, that word sounds like it should fit in here. Well, like it'll go. Like it is so tight.
Yeah.
There's talk about betel nut, which is an interesting drug.
I was going to bring that up. I teach students who grew up in Thailand and they're part of the Karen people. That is an area where people chew betel nut, and a lot of my students' families, people chew betel nut.
Just a quick reference to it, which like I've done research on it before because you can like find it in grocery stores here because we have like such a concentration of like Pacific Islanders and like a lot of other like Southeast Asian and Pacific like people here, and that's kind of where it's from. Like you can find it at the Asian grocer down the road. They just sell it in packs, and it's a stimulant. I won't say it is quite like coffee because it's definitely more than that. It's non-regulated. You can just buy some and chew it and do it. And it's definitely not good for you. Long-term use can like leads to like mouth and esophageal cancer. And it very much causes orange discoloration around your mouth and teeth, like permanent. So like it's not good for you, but it's in very common use and also has like religious for certain people it has religious use as well. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. So we kind of have another reference to like you're definitely in Southeast Asia now. Like there's connection there. Talked about the crossbow stuff already. Slingers. Slings have like back in ancient times, I mean we're talking like biblical times, like and before that.
David and Goliath.
Yep. Like slings were the epitome of ranged combat. Like back then, like before, you know, we got like recurve bows and yew long bows and stuff. Like slings were it because they had a faster rate of fire, theoretically went longer as well, depending on what rocks you used. Like back in Roman times, they started in, I think, Greek and Roman times, they started using lead balls to get like further range. And the people that were, I think it was called the Baldrics, they lived on an island chain in the Mediterranean, and they were hired out as mercenaries because like all they did was herd animals. So from like childhood, I'm talking like 3, 4, 5 years old, they were born with like to use slings. They were incredibly good at their jobs. And you know, when you're fighting against people with spears or swords, you know, you got a couple of feet of reach, maybe 10 feet if they're using pikes or something, or 16 feet. When you can stand like 80, 100 feet away and just like lob rocks at them and like hit them, and we're talking like up to a pound, it'll fuck up your day. It doesn't matter if you have a shield or not or armor, it will fuck you up.
Well, I mean, like I said David and Goliath a minute ago, but that's also like that's kind of the story because David's like a herder. He's just this herder kid,
Yeah.
but he's good with a sling because of that, because that's what
It
they use to defend the sheep.
translates directly from agricultural use at home to wartime use. So
So
if
you
Jima
just, I was thinking it makes it easy to like get all the farmers. You have people who are already equipped at this. You're like, hey, You were already armed. Let's go.
And ammo is plentiful. You don't have to spend time making arrows, because arrow making, it's not like hard, but it is time consuming. Meanwhile, with a sling, you just look down at the ground and like, oh, this is an appropriate sized rock. I'm gonna pick up 20 and keep them in a pouch, and you're good to go. It's self-resupplying, essentially. So yeah,
But you
slings
were going to
are
say
very cool.
something about GMUT.
Yeah, G-Mutt is amazing. He can throw shit. He's got slings. He had Briar's, like, the rest of his magical kit with him, like, ready to go. Like, when Briar asked for it, like, he was literally carrying it with him. He's been fucking on it this entire book. I can't think of another, like, assistant more worthy of praise than G-Mutt. Like,
Right.
he's awesome.
As we said before we started this recording, he defends Briar from enemy smells, enemy smells, enemy spells with a mirror.
Yeah,
The River Dancer is over on Rosethorn, like drawing all these symbols in the air, and Chima's like, "Let me just pull out my handy dandy mirror."
he's so fucking cool. God damn, G-Mutt is so cool. He's a fucking boss, and I'm glad he's like, I'm glad he's there helping Briar, because he even like sets up their tent and stuff. Like, he's fucking on it. Which lets, you know, Rosethorn and Briar focus on their thing, which is kicking ass. Kind of already talked about it, but the quote of "We will use what we have, Rosethorn told him, it will be enough," after, you know, Briar wishes there was a little girl that he knew that could help with the fight. Unfortunately, she is not there, but not for the reasons they're thinking. She's currently writing Big Milk on the way, I'm sure.
She's coming, guys. It's going to be okay. She's
It'll be
coming with
all
her new friend who probably destroyed that fort.
which is so, again, like, I know we already kind of went over the whole fort destroying thing, but he's like, Evie, don't worry about it, they're gone, I took care of it, and he just fucking demolishes a fort on his own.
It tells you how much he cares for Evie and how quickly
Very
he's
quickly.
like, this person matters to me. I'm a mountain. Humans have never really meant much, but this one does, and I will destroy an entire fort for you. Like,
Yeah. He can tell she was suffering, and, you know, I guess it helps that she is an ambient stone mage, but, like, you know, he definitely does care about her, which is very nice.
Well, he does say in Melting Stones when Nori asks how they met. He says, like, Evie's unlike anybody else I've ever met. She sparkles.
Yeah. I really like the quote where Parahan is talking to Rosethorn about that he had seen her fight and that she does not hang back. And she replies that, "I am like most who take up a religious life in our wicked world. I will not surrender to evil or allow anyone in my charge to be harmed by evil. And violence that kills the helpless and destroys the beauties of the world is evil. But I am also a healer. It can be depressing to have to repair what you took apart that morning." And then Suda remarks that there are religious orders that live in isolation and refuse to commit any violence. And then Rosethorn replies that, "I hope they are mages who can defend or hide themselves then. I and mine, we live in the real world."
I made like that quote into art in my journal.
It is such a good quote. But I will talk about more of that in the last section. Then they're fighting, they're shooting arrows at each other. We already talked about it, but Briar is like doing the magic, and then he starts feeling like he's choking, like he can't breathe. And he's kind of like trying to figure out what's going on, but he can't quite tell. And then G-Mutt just out of fucking nowhere, just meow. And re apparently it reflects the spells back at the dudes, which is, I'm not going to call it the most useless spell. Like, I'm sure it's some sort of magical mirror, right? It's not just a regular mirror.
I don't
Surely, right?
know.
Because if it is just a regular mirror, holy shit, that magic kind of sucks. Like, if a regular mirror can defeat it,
But this is also like
whack.
a pretty common theme in a lot of fantasy books where a mirror will reflect a spell.
Yeah. sounds like mirrors should kind of be standard equipment for people fighting here. But maybe it only works on like on a Yang Jingyi magic. You know, who knows? I don't know.
That's possible. Or Wei Shu has, yeah, it could be that it only works on certain types of magic or only, even only specific spells. And I would say, like, Wei Shu has spent so much time building him up as this like unstoppable divine force that I could see people like not even questioning it. It makes me wonder, like, what's Jimmu's past? Like, maybe he went through something where he was like, ah, shit, I could do this in the mirror.
He's so competent. Like the fact that he knows that that is what works against whatever is attacking Briar is amazing. Yeah, he's definitely fought before. Yeah, I just imagine like you're a fucking mage and you're like force choking someone from like hundreds of feet away, and then they just hold up a mirror and then you end up choking yourself. It doesn't seem very effective. And then the section right after Rosethorn kind of knocks Briar out of his trance while he's trying to kill the mages with grass. And she tells him that it wasn't a danger to you before kind of fighting, but revenge is bad for the one practicing it as it is for those it is practiced upon. Reminds me a lot of the quote, holding on to a grudge is like drinking poison and hoping it kills somebody else. It is, yeah, it's not, it ain't good for you.
It reminds me of the end of Shatterglass, because that's the one that's always going to stand out in my head. Like, he deserves to die, but do you deserve to kill him?
Kind of already brought it up, but yeah, Briar asks Jimit where the medicine part of his mage kit is. And it's like, it's in my saddlebag right here. Jimit is the goat. He's so competent. Love him. He's great. And then this is right at the end after the conversation with Rosethorn about healing the injured after the battle. He's in his bedroll, ready to sleep, staring at the roof of the tent when he realized that he hadn't seen any wounded Yang Jingyi soldiers. The other healers must have steered him away from them. And he thinks, well, that's good. That way I don't have to make any hard choices. It must have been that clear that he did not want to work on them. That everyone else kind of like they're like, bring that take that guy over there. Don't let Briar look at him. He's not in the mood to help them right now.
So we kind of talked about Briar and Rosethorn like reuniting, but at the very end of that little passage, she says, "Emelon is wonderfully ordinary. We'll go home, and this place will seem like a distant dream." And this reminded me a lot of the end of Cold Fire, when Dajah and Frostpine have been through all of this. They're like, let's go home.
Yeah. It feels like they get into trouble regardless of where they go, but yeah, it is particularly strange here.
I kind of already mentioned this, but the quote, "At times like this, it's hard to be a good dedicate and to trust in the gods and all thing and that all things happen for a reason." Briar stretched himself above the grasses, searching for the beads wrapped around the mage's throats and wrists. He could not tell if the general was also a mage, as General Hankai had been. He could only sense the wooden beads. In his magical vision, they hung in mid-air, shaping three necks and three pairs of arms. He gripped his power for just a moment, then flooded the beads with it. I love this description of the people as negative space. I just think
Yeah.
it's very like I can see, I can picture it.
What I thought of was Toph using like the like sensing through the ground and like that like her vision through that is what I pictured when Briar was doing that.
Yeah, that's a
Kind
really
of
good
just like
comparison.
grayscale with like the thing he can see like lit up.
I brought this up in a previous chapter when we were talking about Briar having no Riz. Briar pulled a tuft of hair out to see how long it was. "I need this cut." He was strict about keeping it an inch long. That way it never curled and it dried fast. So we had, I don't remember how we got onto it, but we were talking about how he had no Riz and And there was something about him needing a haircut. And I was like, he does say that he needs a haircut at one point. This is where it happens. I also like the specificity that like he hates having curly hair. Like he has curly hair, but he keeps it cut super short so you can't tell that it's curly.
I think girls like curly hair. Like in general. Like I don't know if I'm wrong about that, but like
So what I'm hearing is Briar should grow his hair out.
probably.
All right, Briar, you heard it here first.
Don't know, am I wrong? Y'all let us know. Let us know if you think
Do
curly
you
hair is
like
straight hair
curly
anymore.
hair? Yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote page 314. I love how even in death, in quotes, Evie is helping Briar. And 314 is where he gets the idea of like getting somebody to use a sling with the seed balls. And I was like, I don't know exactly where it was going with that thought, but it looks like he is looking at the constellations, and there's one of a herder that Evie really likes, so it gets him thinking about Evie. And then he's like, well, I'm not going to get weepy every time I see a shepherd with a sling. And so that gets him thinking about slings. And he's like, wait a minute. Ding.
Yeah, it was that, and also the fact that to weigh the balls down to make them go further, it was literally putting rocks in them.
So,
That was good.
Evie is still helping him even without being there.
Yeah, even
I
in
guess.
quote unquote death.
Yeah. I guess that's why people like tell you, when somebody dies, oh, they'll always be with you. Like she is with him in that way. Past Molly, why did you not like elaborate on this? Okay, this is not for Goodwin. This is for our listeners. And listeners, please tell me what your thoughts are on this. I wrote, Briar needs to meet Alana. Tell me I'm wrong. So please write in, contact us on our socials, tell me what you think of that. Apparently, Past Molly determined Briar needs to meet Alana, and I don't remember the exact reason why, but I would love to know your thoughts.
Wish I could help, but I couldn't tell you.
I think it's just that she is incredibly fiery. Like she's the epitome of like the tiny fiery redhead. And she is like ready to throw hands immediately. And he's just very ready to throw hands in this chapter. Oh,
Definitely.
no, I know what it is. Because at the end of this chapter, they're healing. And he gets like worn out healing people. And that happens to her. So in one of the books, she is in a battle. She like goes to help heal because she has a gift for healing. She like literally passes out because she does too much healing.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
And so like Briar's kind of in this same boat. So yeah.
He was kind of overdoing it at the end, too.
Right.
I think
So
he literally got told to go to bed.
They're like, no, stop. And that's the kind of thing that happens to her. They're like, no, stop. You need to rest. You need to take care of yourself.
That's right. It was a River Dancer, which is where we get that mage's name. Or no, must have been
I
before
don't know.
that.
I think
Yeah.
she might have been mentioned in like a previous chapter, even, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, she's like, y'all go to bed.
And this is apparently a theme in Tamara Pierce novels because we also saw it in Briar's book, because that is how Henna died. Because she didn't rest and she put too much of herself into the healing.
That's right. Yeah. And I maybe it was the line, there was less risk of a medicine collapsing onto a patient because the medicines could keep working even after they were done. I don't know if
I
Alana collapsed on someone, but
don't know. But yeah, just like she's he, yeah, she works herself too hard, she stretches herself too thin, and then he does the same. So yeah, they got a lot of common. They should hang out. Also, I think he would annoy the shit out of her, and it would be delightful. Hashtag Alana Neal. page 312, my notes are apparently not in any kind of order. Briar is asking Pseudomini about what they how close to them are we, and so he's asking for information. Perhaps you and then she says, perhaps you don't know that it's not common for commanders to share information with soldiers unless it's absolutely necessary. And he's like, but you need to share it with your mages, don't you? And she's like, you're plant mages. Like, what are you gonna do? And I wrote, oh, Suda, you're so cute and dumb.
She just doesn't know.
She
I mean,
hasn't seen them in action. It's fine.
Parahan had the exact same reaction,
Yes, he
and then he
did.
learned.
Yes.
He saw it in person and was like, "Oh, plants kind of go hard too, actually."
Okay, I wrote page 315, savage, and I have no idea what that's about. I think that word is used somewhere.
It is. I remember that.
Because I think that's why I wrote it down. I was like, OMFG, she's using savage the way we do. But I don't know what the exact line is. You might be able to find it faster because you have Kindle.
Oh yeah, I can just look up a word. Parahan says, "I smell battle coming. It's about time." And then Rosethorn replies, "Savage."
Oh, okay. And then I wrote the horses exclamation point with a face.
Yeah, when big battles happen involving horses, for as big and as powerful as a horse is, they are incredibly fragile. Maybe put a content warning on the site. I'm not gonna get like into it, but like legs snap very easily. If a horse or a rider falls over, going, full tilt, like galloping, one of them falls over, gets hit with an arrow, whatever. It's a chain reaction. Horses fall over them, they get hurt, and it just spreads out and horses do not recover well, and especially in, wartime. So the only thing you can do is give them the mercy stroke, because most of them won't be able to heal on time. Any horse with a broken leg is, it's incredibly hard to heal from that for an animal like that. So sometimes that's all you can do. So yeah, sad.
Yeah.
Sad times.
Just to try and not end on a total downer. I don't know exactly where this is, but Parahan is described as having, quote, a beak of a nose, which is the same way that Duke Vedras is described. So I think that he also needs to wear power like a cloak at some point. Although, let's be fair, he probably doesn't. His sister does.
I think it's about time. Like we haven't seen that one in a minute.
Maybe that's why Kit was in here twice, because she couldn't figure out how to get in power like a quote.
Yeah, that's why he was sent off, I guess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Part two of our three-step reading process is reading like a dedicate. This is where we look for a theme or message in the chapter. My theme was revenge,
That
and
was mine.
I wrote page 321. So I'm gonna flip to page 321 and see if I can add anything to this. Oh, you already read this, but
I didn't even think about it, because that it was just
yeah.
such a good quote, but
But
yeah.
I'm gonna read it again. I'm gonna read like that whole little section here. He got that bad feeling, the sense of fingers wrapped around his body's real ear, the fingers twisted. Only one thing would make that pain stop. Slowly, so he wouldn't frighten his grasses and oak trees, he retreated across the field and back into the body that hurt with Evie's loss. He opened his eyes. Rosethorn released his ear after an extra hard flick with finger and thumb. What if we'd had to escape? Rosethorn demanded. Do you know how many mages get trapped away from themselves? You never said anything before, he muttered, rubbing the sore ear. He wondered if the grasses had succeeded in killing those mages. It wasn't a danger with you before, Rosethorn sighed. Revenge is as bad for the one practicing it as it is for those it's practiced upon. So, like, it was worth reading again since that's our theme. And we always have to stretch out part two. But yeah, you also mentioned how, I mean, we talked about this a lot already, how Rosethorn, when she finds out about Evie's death, says, like, you know, I can't get answers from the gods, so I'll have to take out my anger on Weishu and his army. Yeah.
Yeah, revenge for revenge's sake is what the issue is. Kind of how we talked about before. Like for her, it's not just that;
Yeah.
it is also to defend the people of Guangxi and the tenets of her faith.
Yeah. Briar's just, I am hurt, and so I'm going to hurt everyone else around me. It's not going to go well.
No.
Part three of our three-step reading process is reading like a mage. This is where we use the text to craft magic in our own lives. I'm going to go first because I think yours is going to be more poignant than mine. Finally, Briar had to ask, what was it like? Rosethorn said, sighed, I can't say. Wasn't it just a temple? It was, and it wasn't. I can't put it any better than that. You could try. Briar, it's not permitted. I had to swear an oath. He knew she meant it. I hate that. You know, just once you could break an oath. Then how would you ever trust me, boy, or I you? Keep your promises. And I don't really have a lot to add to that. Just keep your promises.
That's like, I think, huge in a relationship is
Yeah.
to keep your promises and to tell the truth. Like, regardless of what it is, like, you need to be honest with your partner. Because when you hide stuff, that's where issues begin and can get worse.
Right.
So, yeah, once trust is broken once, it is very, very, very hard, nigh impossible to get it back. So just be honest about stuff. So my personal magic, and I know I've brought this up before, but I think it bears repeating because it's a good fucking message. But
Hells yeah, it is.
yeah, it's obviously the big part where Rosethorn is talking to Briar and says, I will not surrender to evil or allow anyone in my charge to be harmed by evil, and violence that kills the helpless and destroys the beauties of the world is evil. But I am also a healer. It can be depressing to repair what you have taken apart that morning. There are religious orders that live in isolation and refuse to commit any violence, Suta remarked. I hope there are mages that can defend or hide themselves then, Rosa replied. I and mine, we live in the real world. It just instantly reminds me about the idea of nonviolent protests, the refusal to do harm against others. That only works against people who have compassion or care, or what I wrote down was a semblance of a soul. Because against people who are inherently immoral, you only fail if you do not resist violence with violence. It reminds me of one of my favorite short stories by Harry Turtledove. It's called The Last Article, where Nazis invade the British Raj, defeat the British Indian Army, and in 1947, Gandhi and his followers struggle against a Nazi occupation instead of a British one.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's alternate history. Long story short,
I have
they
some really
fail.
interesting. I don't remember the details of this because it was like a year ago that this episode aired, but the podcast Unorthodox was occasionally having a segment where Liel dug up really interesting pieces of literature that were housed at the National Library in Israel, something like that. And there is a letter that Gandhi wrote to Hitler, I think. And yeah, but basically, like Gandhi sort of criticized Jews for like not being nonviolent enough in that segment of that episode. Liel's like, yeah, they would have all died. So, yeah, I think that that's really interesting that somebody actually wrote this alternate history.
It would not surprise me at all to hear that maybe this story was influenced by that letter.
It may have
Be
been.
because it is such an interesting like juxtaposition of, a nonviolent protest against British people, who I joke around a lot about, people when talking about British people is in quotes, but they have a heart. They have empathy, even if it's relatively small. Viewing their history of oppression against, native peoples. But when you do that against the savagery of Nazism, it's night and day. When people tell you that you are not a person and like dehumanize you, they have the justification to do awful things to you. You cannot allow them to do that. You need to stand up for your family and friends, take self-defense courses, become a community with the people around you, fight back, because I really urge everyone to read the story because I'm not going to do it justice, but I mean, Gandhi and his followers fail because the Nazis don't care. They will kill you whether you resist or if you don't resist. Based solely on your race or your religion, it doesn't matter. They killed everyone that didn't align with their views exactly. It didn't matter if you fought back or not. So fight back. Don't sit there complacent, being peaceful, and hope that you'll, sneak through. You can't do that.
Another thing, this is, I don't remember exactly where I heard this, but I heard somewhere that social change, things like women's suffrage, the civil rights movement, do not happen without having both a nonviolent and a violent component. And like if you look at the civil rights movement, we have Martin Luther King and we have Malcolm X. If you take one of them out of the equation, the whole thing would fall apart because when you only have nonviolent protesters, people ignore them because, like, they're not going to do anything anyway. But when you only have violent protesters, then it gives people the excuse of like essentially dehumanizing them, right? Like they're just acting like animals or crazy, whatever. You have all these, you can come up with all these excuses. And so it's when the two of them are working in tandem, that's when shit actually starts to happen.
Because you do need both.
We like to end our episodes with an excerpt from the following chapter. So this is an excerpt from chapter 18 of Battle Magic. General Sayrugo's camp was on alert. The enemy's scouts had been seen to the north and to the west. She ordered triple sentries and prayed she would unite with Captain Lango and the twins from the realms of the sun the next day. All the signs pointed to a big fight before she even reached Garmashing. Suddenly, she heard an uproar. Cursing, she grabbed her sword and raced to the source of the noise. On the southern line of defense, her guards stood and pointed at something. With a roar of command, she sent the onlookers back to their posts and squinted into the growing twilight. At least the other sentries had kept their positions, she told herself. Then she blinked and blinked again. The plain was tearing itself in two, 100 yards away from their picket line. The ground was trembling under her feet. She turned to yell for her shamans, only to feel the quivering stop. She stared at the hole that had opened in the, up until now, solid, reliable earth. The biggest yak she had ever seen in her life plodded out of the hole and began to graze on the grass near it. Then, as Sayrugo and her sentries gawped like farmers in Garmashing for the first time, someone slid off the yak. The someone removed some bags or packs, slinging one off his or her shoulders. Then the someone scratched the yak on the forehead. Sayrugo knew there was another word for a yak's forehead, but she was a city woman. She didn't know these things. She did, however, know all the words for the pieces of a crossbow. She held out her hand, groping for one in the empty air. A huge voice boomed in the air. "Do not attack us, defenders of Gyeongshi." It was deep and musical. It could not belong to the person who walked toward them, hands holding bags in the air. "We are allies to you and foes to the invader from Yanjing." The huge yak turned and ambled south on the plain. Sayrugo wished she could do the same.
Holy shit.
Reading Circle Temple is produced by us, Molly,
Brittany,
Indy,
and Goodwin.
If you like the show, tell your friends about us.
If you don't like the show, tell your enemies.
You can also help people find us by leaving a rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Find all our episodes at our new home on Acast, shows.acast.com/readingcircletemple.
Shake at us. We'd love to hear from you.
Send us an email at templeofreadingcircle@gmail.com.
You can also follow Reading Circle Temple on Instagram, Tumblr, and Facebook. And you can join our Reading Circle Temple Facebook group.
To find us on Twitter, tweet at Reading Temple.
A special thanks to Yellow is for Happy for our artwork. You can find more of their art by following Yellow is for Happy Draws on Tumblr and Shannon Ann Draws on Instagram.
Another special thanks to Brittany's brother, Thomas Dick, for our theme music. You can find more of his music by following Thomas Dick on SoundCloud.
Thanks to Tamara Pierce for writing The Circle of Magic, and thanks to you for listening.
Let's all have coffee next week.
This is for Brittany. This
Brittany would flip her lid if she was on here and she saw that.
Jimut is the goat. Therefore, when he was younger, he was a kid.
Oh my god.
That's for you, Brittany. I love you.